You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network. OneOfUs.net and all of the shows on it are 100% subscriber supported. Please consider becoming a subscriber to OneOfUs.net. Keep the site and all of our great shows going and get some terrific bonus content as well.
Well, this season got dark.
A little dark. Just a tad.
Yeah. I mean, it couldn't last, of course, because at some point they're like, oh, right, it's a fun school anime, but...
It reminds me of Mac and It's Always Sunny just going, is this the darkest thing we've ever done?
See, I think in this case it's totally true.
Yeah, I think that he did Marvel, he did Silver Age stuff, the creator, did some Golden Age stuff with All Might, you know, doing his big thing in the last season, and this season I feel like he sat down and was like, have I done any Frank Miller stuff yet?
Anything that would, you know, be a plot line in The Punisher. It's like,
yeah, exactly.
Which is funny, you could argue he already did that with Stain, because Stain has totally got parody of like Daredevil era kind of villains.
Oh, yeah, you're kind of right. Yeah, he's even got like the sharp edges and the noir
prior
look
to this. Yeah, Stain was the darkest thing that ever done.
And, yeah,
guys, I miss
he was
Stain,
just like
guys.
The one guy though.
Yeah.
Yeah, in this case, you got a whole team of bad guys to fight, but it also brought out some of the best stuff that the show has ever done, which I have to argue that. But hey, everybody, this is our review of My Hero Academia Season 4. Man, I'm so glad I got into this show.
It's really good.
Oh, yeah, because I know when Brad and I first started reviewing stuff for My Hero, it was the first movie, which when I watched the first movie, I hadn't seen the show at all. And now that I'm fully caught up, I'm just so glad I did. I bought the first three volumes of the manga, too, and I did read those. So
nice.
But yeah, like I said, I'm Justin, and over here we got Mike Riojas.
Hey.
And then we got Bradley.
Hello.
And Lexi was supposed to be on here, but it's early in the morning, and she is way too tired before doing work. So just like...
It happens.
Yeah. I know she has a few things she wants to make sure I mention on the review when we do it, so I'll get to those when I do.
Awesome.
So, Bradley, why don't you give us a short summation? Like, where are we in the season so far? Like, when we start season 4?
Oh, it's been such a long time. How did this season start? Okay.
I know, right?
The season starts with Midoriya joining the Sir Knight Eye Agency.
Oh, that's right. He needs to get his paper stamped. And Sir Knight Eye, who is All Might's old protege, does not want some fiddle-faddle, no symbol of peace future... bogging his team down, but Midoriya over the season has to prove to Sir Night Eye and prove to himself that he is worthy of the mantle of one for all.
Yes.
Also, the Yakuza makes an appearance. It's a little weird, I thought. You know, I think it can work though when real life crime syndicates mix with my fantasy superhero. What would you call it? Villainy. I don't know if it was completely successful. We can certainly talk about it. But the Chihasakai, I believe his name is the leader of this alleged Yakuza group.
The Chihasakai is the name of the group.
Is that the name of the group or is that his name?
No, because the main guy's name is Overhaul, the main villain.
Yeah, but I think his actual name is Shikasi.
Oh, is it?
Oh, yeah.
If I remember correctly.
See, I'd have to look it up. That was confusing me as well. Like, is this guy naming
Midoriya
himself?
Midoriya yells it every 20 seconds. So.
Yeah, Chihasakai! Oh, and I love that guy's voice when it gets all overdubbed. Overhaul is overdubbed for layered evilness. That always happens during the big fight scenes. And he's all, Overhaul. It's very cool.
Yeah, Kai Chisaki was his name.
There you go.
Okay, so then it is, that's his name.
It's similar sounding to his organization.
His voice actor for both English and Japanese was really good.
Because the guy who does the English voice, I mean, I just, you know, mostly follow the English anime, is Kellen Goff. And he's... I don't recognize a lot of his characters, but he's actually quite prevalent a voice actor. Like, he was in Berserk, he was in, apparently he had a voice role in Five Nights at Freddy's, the sister location game, so.
I only ever played the one.
That sounds right.
Yeah. But, man, first of all, I gotta say, I guess the My Hero Academia have faced their greatest foes yet, the Toucan Sam Yakuza, because all those gosh dang plague masks they're wearing, I just couldn't stop seeing.
They have to follow their nose to defeat them.
Yeah, Did you guys, I understand why the head guy did it. Did the other ones just do it because they were a part of a stormtrooper mentality?
Like it was like a solidarity thing because they were such a big fan of his kind of thing.
Yeah, it was kind of like a Yakuza cult almost.
Yeah, it was so basically strange. Just like, we really like him and he does this, so we're going to do this.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Yeah, that's but fine.
Honestly, like, next to, like, Shigaraki, which, you know, Shigaraki, I always go back and forth in that way of, like, is he actually a threat? But then also, you know, in traditional sense that he always gets beat anytime he puts out an evil scheme. But, man, Shizaki, or whatever his name is, he's a pretty scary dude once you get to know more about him.
Oh, no, absolutely. And that's where this is the first half of the anime that we're still talking about at this point.
Is it half season. Or two-thirds? It feels like he went on for
like,
a while.
About two-thirds of it. And so, the thing about him is that you discover as, like, the first time you meet him, you're already kind of, like, weirded out by him. And the way everyone reacts to him as well kind of just shows that these guys are scared of this guy. They don't know why yet, but they're scared of him. And you're scared of him because at one point, like, he slowly is lifting his hand. You're like, what the fuck is he going to do? Or what is he going to do? And then, like, the tensions drop because the main thing revolves around this little girl that they want to save. Who his horrible, horrible scheme very much involves this little girl who this is where the darkness comes in is really what it comes down to.
Yeah, when you see how deep the rabbit hole goes or what his plans are, you're just like, this dude's messed up.
Yeah, because at first it's just like, oh, it's his daughter or whatever, and it's like she's just kind of. This is just kind of weird. It's like, no, this is a whole thing. And he is doing horrible, horrible things to many people.
And also, just kind of got that mentality where not only do the ends justify the means, like, no means actually matter towards anything. Everyone should just shut up, lay down, and let him do what he wants. That's what I got out of his convictions. Is that close? Did I misinterpret?
It was pretty kind of his convictions, because he was like an orphaning kind of guy who was raised by this Yakuza guy who saw the Yakuza slowly go from the badass thing that we know as it now, but it's kind of like the mob in Batman. The mob used to be like this great big thing, but then Batman showed up, and then the villain showed up, and then the mob was like bullshit compared to the villains now.
Yeah.
Well, much like the history lesson with Brad, much like the IRA in Ireland, the Yakuza early on in the 30s and 40s wasn't a horrific crime syndicate. They were a group of the people. And like most group of the peoples, they slowly turn into a terrorist organization. So I think head boss, Yakuza guy, was supposed to be a relic from that older type of days when they actually felt like they were helping people and a staple of society. Which clearly they aren't. But, yeah.
That was very much his thought process. He's like, I don't want to deal drugs. I don't want to do anything like super heinous. I just want to. He's like, I still do crime. He's like, but I'm not a monster. That's basically
kind of convoluted there. What did you think, Justin?
Oh, I agree. I mean, it's that warped sense of justice. But that's the thing where they make it very clear. Early on, they're just like, yeah, overhaul. Isn't here just to play. I mean, flat out, he murders one of the other League of Villain characters. Like, I think, wasn't that early in the season here when
it did that? Yeah, it's like the first episode of the season.
Yeah, Big Mag's sister. She didn't really get much of an appearance other than to be a redshirt, but.
Yeah, she gets redshirted hard in the season.
But that's the thing where they make it clear, like, to scale the threat, that he's a guy who is not to be messed with. And that's, that's a big chunk of this season is just the huge eventual buildup to the fight with Overhaul. Because they pretty much do like a, what am I thinking? Like one of those like, room by room kind of things where they take on his main henchmen one at a time or two at a time. And
it's like Game of Death is what you're saying. Like,
yeah, exactly.
The thing is that like, I brought up Eri earlier, but Eri is very much the center, the soul of this season.
She's adorable.
And it's the battle, for her soul, essentially. Like, Midoriya and Buff Tintin, I can't remember his name off the top of my head.
Lemillion,
yes.
Yeah, I gotta say, of everybody else in this season who they introduced, this guy is easily the MVP of the entire show at this point, because
he's really good.
Love Lemillion.
Yeah, Lemillion is a fascinating idea of... he's also very much an accidental conflict in Midoriya's head, which is, am I as good as Lemillion? Mark, who like could have been the guy. He could have been instead of me. If I hadn't ran into All Might, like Lemillion could have been the guy. And that's, he can't get over the fact that this guy is so fucking good at everything he does compared to him. But he has to remember that this guy's been, that guy's been doing it for ages, longer than Midoriya. Kind of,
yeah,
thing.
And
even,
he's,
even if it's like a few years.
Yeah, a few years of more experience, but also the fact that Lemillion, what makes it more interesting is that not only is he the competitor to have become the protege, Lemillion's not a bad dude. In fact, he's exactly what he should be for a superhero. Like, he is just, he's nice, he's super considerate for others, he's brave. It's like, man, this guy is, like, faultless when it comes to his intentions as being a superhero.
Well, that's the thing that makes it interesting, because unlike, you know, say, the first Captain America movie, where it's like, oh, the other guy who could have been Captain America is this huge prick. And so it's like, well, it's this conflict for, like, a little bit, where this guy is like, no, this guy is like, I would be cool with him having one for all kind of thing. He is the epitome of, like, righteousness, and he is just, he has a smile on his face the whole time, the same way as All Might. And you can't help but understand Sir Nighteye's position, where he's just like, why didn't he give it to him? It's like, you're just some dude he randomly met in the street. Like, this, like, this doesn't make any sense to me. And the thing, but the main thing is that Lemillion and Midoriya feel like they failed Eri because they could have saved, like, they could have saved her, but probably at the cost of one of their lives.
Yeah, really, could they have saved her? That's the thing, and that's youth. Youth always second-guesses itself, plus ultra, I'm going to say, in several different scenarios. While Sir Nighteye has the knowledge to be like, dude, you did the right thing by not getting involved at that time. Quit beating yourselves up.
Well, exactly, because yeah. If they had got involved at that point, their investigation would have went to shit, and B, they wouldn't have been able to save her, I think, really in the best possible ways.
I don't mean that either,
the action sequence. I mean, like, literally no one gets hurt kind of thing. Or not no one gets hurt, but, you know, like, casualty would have been endowed.
Yeah.
But, but yeah, that's, Eri is very much, like, they discover that Shisaki has been making a new drug that will stop people's powers from working, whether or not temporarily or permanently, is to be seen at the time. And so they decide that they need to save this girl no matter what. And so, and that's very much what, that's very much the conflict in Midoriya throughout the season. And
now, that's a X-Men plot, isn't it?
This
it drug
might
will take your mutant powers away, but it was Apocalypse.
Well, that's the plot of
X-Men
3, more or less. So.
Oh no! I don't want to talk about the movies. Sorry.
Well, there is a mutant in, like, the X-Men who can take away powers if he wants, but, like, it's a temporary thing. Like, when, like, hers, she has the ability to reverse a person time-wise, and so what it does is it apparently attacks the cells in the person's blood that make them, you know, have their quirk.
Unique,
to basically reverse them to the point before they had either had powers or just do it temporarily. Like, originally it's a temporarily thing, but then it's later revealed that, you know, Shisaki has perfected this thing through, and the thing is that, like, the way he makes the thing is just horrendous sounding every time it's even, like, slightly explained. Like, your imagination does all the work, and there's all these, she's covered in bandages, and it's just, it makes you so upset. You feel Midoriya, you feel Lemillion's pain and their anger, and you just can't wait to see them save this girl.
Yeah, and it's funny because, like, you think Eri is just, like, a one-time damsel in distress kind of thing, but she actually becomes a prominent part of the season, like, even after the major stuff happens with the Yakuza.
Exactly.
And she's just a sweetheart, you know? She's just a sweet little innocent kid who just got abused by this horrible, horrible dude.
It's so crazy. Like, it's such a good season, and that... The actual raid on the Yakuza place, because they finally get the go-ahead from something Sir Nighteye is able to figure out, and they finally get the go-ahead, and that's where things really, really explode, literally.
Oh, yeah. That's the thing I want to warn people. It's like, so I remember my aunt was talking to me the other day because she wanted to find stuff to watch with her kids and stuff, or stuff that they might like, and I was going to recommend this. And then I watched this season, and I saw how freaking bloody the fight with the Yakuza got, and I'm just like... Maybe I need to wait to recommend this one to that little guy.
It gets intense.
Like, full-on, like, people getting impaled by stuff and blood splattering all over the screen and, you know, like, just... Like, it's not, like, R-rated, like, Helsing Ultimate kind of thing, but it's still pretty brutal for anything else that's happened so far in the show.
Well, there's also a lot of emotional damage going on throughout it as well. People, like, telling each other that they're garbage, and people, like, as much as they can. And it's emotional, that can be very emotionally damaging to somebody.
Oh, and there's some long-term consequences. Like, you think, like, those kind of things where it's like, oh, they're just going to reverse it at the end of the season. It's like, nope. Some stuff, when it happens, it's there, and it's done, and it's going to be there for a long time. Pretty much.
Well, and that's what the show's really good at.
Exactly. There's, like, this negative, I call it it's a nitpick of mine, where certain people's quirks are too on the nose of, well, of course you're a villain. Like this one guy, for the violence you're talking about, his quirk is literally, I eat people. Like, oh, what? It's like, yeah, I eat everyone, and I'm hungry all the time. Like, well, how the hell is that guy not going to be a villain? And then we do get to see him, you know, put that quirk to use, and it's pretty creepy.
Yeah, but then it's also to counteract the other person who can eat stuff, who is also kind of a fun little side character I liked, a Sun Eater in this season, who apparently has the power to take on the power of any food or, like, the animal of the food he eats that day kind of thing, which is kind of cool.
It's
fascinating. Yeah. So that made me think of a lot of situations like, so what's the possible powers he can gain with any kind of food he eats? You know, just a little thought experiment. Like, oh, if he ate this, what would he get? It's like, would he get, like, asparagus arms if he ate asparagus or something like that?
Oh, yeah. One of the guys in the big three, Tamaki Amajiki, I think his name is. He, like, octopus arms, giant clam. He just eats seafood, it seems, and has the power of the ocean.
Well, then he also eats chicken, so he can get chicken powers, apparently.
Yeah,
well,
exactly. Oh, with his big foot. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's one point, like, it turns out he just needs to eat anything, and he gets its power. Like, he eats the crystal off of a guy who's attacking him, and gains that guy's crystal power.
Yeah, that was pretty cool, yeah.
Well, yeah, he could cannibalize other people if he wanted to.
That's what I love, though, is that, like, even him, who seems like he's just an expendable-ish kind of, like, one-off character who just happens to be related to Mirio's story, they actually give him a full backstory as well as to his inadequacies and why he feels he has to push himself forward, which, again, I gotta applaud the, what's the head writer's name of the whole series?
Uh-oh, I don't know, actually.
Sorry, I knew it off the top of my
head.
Well, it's a name that I don't have memorized yet.
Oh, it's Koe Horikoshi.
Yeah, I never would have known that.
Yeah, but I looked it up. But that dude, he's just such a great writer when it comes to giving backstory to characters, even the minor ones who don't seem to matter. Like, he really gets into these people's heads, and you start to really like all of them.
Yeah, that's what makes the show work as well as it does, is because it's willing to give you the information about the characters, and it makes you that much more scared for them. Because if you were just watching, like, some guy who's like, I'm a hero, I guess, but you don't know anything about them, you're just like, well, if you die, it doesn't really matter. But then it'll be like, but that guy has a wife and a kid that he just got. It's like, well, shit, now I'm scared. Kind of thing.
And he's making declarations of love towards them as well.
That guy. What's that guy's name? Like, Rocklock or whatever? Where I'm just like, random side character. And you're like, oh, he's got motivations too.
Exactly. It's just like, hey, real quick, here's his motivation. Be scared for him. I'm like, damn.
Yeah.
Well, and also, at least one of my favorite introductions, Fat Gum, which is like the weirdest power of, like, he can convert calories into strength kind of thing. I'm just
great. Fat Gum is one of my favorites because he's voiced by two of my favorite anime characters. He's voiced English-wise by Gohan and voiced Japanese-wise by Jonathan Joestar.
Oh, that's where I recognized his voice. Oh, wow. That's Adult Gohan, huh?
Yeah, he's Adult Gohan. He also does Ryu, as well as a few other things. Kyle Herbert is a very, very great voice actor, and a super sweet guy. But and he lends all his sweetness to Fat Gum, and also the intensity that he can bring as well during the fight sequences. They're just every voice actor in this show, both English and Japanese, they pick such great people to do these voices. The battles in the Yakuza are really interesting because they're not just like, I'm stronger than you battles. They're just like, well, I can outsmart you, or sometimes they are like, maybe I'm stronger than you, but I have more of a conviction kind of thing. And it's fascinating to see everybody struggle because everybody's working the hardest to save this little girl. Like for a lot of them, it's not even, hey, we're going to stop this guy. It's like a lot of them, it's we got to save Eri. And it's really sweet to watch, but it's also really heartbreaking to see some of the stuff people have to go through to get to that point.
Yeah. Now, we've been talking a lot about the Yakuza section. There's also the last third of the season. And here's the thing. I get why they decided to shift tones after the whole Yakuza thing, because it was just so dark that they had to go, look, we got to do something fun. If we don't do something fun, we're going to go crazy.
Was that fun for you guys?
Okay.
I loved it.
Yeah, like, when I say fun, they went for something lighter. And that's the thing is, like, on the one hand, I appreciate the sentiment of what they're doing. On the other hand, it definitely feels like it's a buzzkill, only in relation to how... I'm trying to think of the right words. Like, the stuff with the Yakuza was so dramatic and so involving that suddenly shifting tones and going, and now let's watch the kids do a school festival. I was just kind of like, okay, why not?
Like, for me, it was like... Sorry, but I just want to say, for me, it was like, there's still two Horcruxes out there, but Harry Potter's like, I know, but I want to go play Quidditch for a minute.
It's like in Mass Effect, if they had the Citadel DLC, when it's like, you know, we're supposed to be fighting the Reapers, but Commander Shepard, you need a break. Go have a party. We'll deal with them while you're gone.
Yeah. I forgot about
be
that
be sure
DLC,
to pick the right drinks.
It's like, you sure you don't want me to help with the galactic threat that might end all life? No. Go relax.
The thing is that the show reminds you that, hey, they're still in high school. And Japanese high school shows love festivals.
Like, oh, yeah.
No matter what it is. Every anime I've watched that has somebody in high school, there's a festival somewhere in there. Like, and there's just no exception. But the thing is that what I liked about it is that it gives you good character motivation for everybody. Because one, it's everybody is unwinding. Because mentally, even they are not all there at the moment. And not only that, it's also like, hey, we've caused so many issues to this school that we just want to put something back to these people so they don't hate us with a passion. And then the other thing is that Midoriya, and like I said, this is why I said that the fight for Eri's soul, I think, is very much the point of the season, is that he wants her to finally start having a normal life. And he feels like this is the first step towards it. And they just want to see her smile. And it's that meme you see where it's like, protect the smile at all costs kind of thing. Except that he's trying to make that happen at all costs. And it's fascinating, and I love it. And it's very much him, and it's very much these characters. And that's what makes Gentle Criminal so interesting to me.
Yeah, because then that's the, I guess, the major threat, quote, of that last third of the season, which, you know... When you say threat, Gentle Criminal, he's an interesting character. He's not anywhere near the threat of the other people, but it does provide some amount of conflict where it's like, yeah, he is like just a gentleman thief, where he's like, oh yeah, I commit these crimes, but I'm not a violent man, and I wouldn't dare hurt anybody kind of thing. But it just so happens that what he wants to do is in direct
British
conflict
into
with their...
English dub?
Oh, sorry, what?
Was he like a British stuck-up guy in the English dub?
Oh, he was falling like, oh, I am Gentle Criminal.
He was great. I loved his English voice actor a lot. That's cool. But his Japanese voice actor was also really good.
I was hoping he would have that kind of tone about him, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It's like where he's... the thing is, like, I wasn't all that crazy about him at first because I was just like, okay, why should we care about this dude who's going to get defeated by the end of the season? But, like, in the last two episodes he shows up, they do a heel turn and they go, this is why you should care. And I'm just like... Gosh dang it, how do you do this to me every time you give interesting motivations to all these characters?
Exactly, like that's what I said, like every time the show's like, hey, I don't really care about this guy, but do you now? And like it slips you like his backstory and you're like, Jesus, stop doing that.
Well, yeah, because it presented an interesting concept where I'm like, what happened? Well, I don't know if I want to fully spoil that on the review just here.
Well,
but
we
when
kind
you find
of
out-
spoiled a few other things, so, but the thing is, yeah, Gentle Criminal's just, he's an interesting, like, well, he just has a backstory of just like, he failed at his dream, and he wants his dream still. But he's going in a different path now from his original dream.
Yeah. No, and it was really sweet. And then you also got LaBrava, his sidekick, which one of the more interesting quirk powers I've seen on the show so far. I'm just like, okay, that's an interesting way to
interpret that. What did they call it? Stockholm Syndrome? Is that what
it's... it's the power of Huey Lewis in the news. She uses the power of love to power people.
If that song had started playing in the background when she activated her cork, that would mean it's like, dan, dan, dan.
That needs to be a thing. The internet needs to work on that right now. Because I never thought I needed that until now. But
So I just want to say, this character, At first, I thought this was a disgusting character. I'm talking about Labravra. I hate when animes do this. I'm so tired of 8-year-old kids
or whatever.
No, 8-year-old kids being like, yeah. "I love you. I'll die for you. I will tear my own guts out in front of you and see, and say this is my proof of our love." But yeah, she's just drawn that way. Apparently, she's actually 22 years old. So
yeah, she's okay. Actually the same, almost the same age as Gentle. Gentle's like I think maybe a year at most older than she is.
Well, and I know that would have been awkward for her to like have said that, but yeah, she's actually an adult. So once I learned that, I was like, okay, this is actually a pretty, you know, almost relatable type of storyline. Lonely people wish they were in love, and when someone actually acknowledges them, even if they're a loser, and I'm using that as an umbrella statement, that love can actually grow into
Don't
something.
Don't you dare
big,
talk about especially about if
they, yeah, especially if they have ideal goals. Well, Gentle to me was just like Logan Paul. I don't care if you want to be famous. Get out of here. Is that his
Evil
name?
Evil YouTuber name goes right? on a crime spree. Yeah,
that caught me off guard, but it's not it's not uncalled for. Is the thing.
I mean, he's nowhere near as vile. I don't think, but.
No, he's not. He's oh Jesus, his crimes are not nearly as bad as Logan Paul's. But I'm not saying Logan Paul's a criminal, but I'm not saying that. But here's the thing about Gentle Criminal Story that I do appreciate the most, which I brought up on Facebook and Zarian saw, which is that he is that Spider-Man villain that's in between the insane crap and the other insane crap. Because every time Spider-Man has a very personal thing that he needs to take care of, there's always, like, some dude, like the Hypno-Hustler, or Shocker, or the Fly, like the guys that no one really cares all that much about, like, they just appear, and they cause, like, his personal life to suffer for it. And that's who Gentle Criminal is. Gentle Criminal is that character in between, who Midoriya is, like, he's not fighting for the fate of the world, and he's not even fighting for this for Eri's life. He's fighting because he just really, really wants her to smile. And also the fact that he needs to get to the school festival on time. and the thing is that, like, because the thing about Gentle Criminal that I found fascinating is the fact that he isn't really a threat, because even if he got to UA, there's so many heroes there that could have wipe the floor with him within like 10 seconds.
Yeah, the threat is not his actual strength. The threat is what he means to the festival, because if he goes there, they make it clear that they're going to cancel the festival if they like detect even a hint of threat kind of thing.
Exactly. The first sign of trouble, they were going to cancel the whole thing, and that isn't something that he could allow, because everybody was putting their hearts and their souls into this idea. They're finally trying to live their normal lives again after dealing with probably, like I said, to them, the darkest adventure of their life kind of thing. And it was their time to unwind, and that would just adds more to the tension if it's like, well, if you cancel everything, then it just means that nothing can go back to normal.
And oh, yeah.
It's a horrifying thought to him, and it's a horrifying thought even to, like, the grand scheme of everything, because people aren't trusting their heroes at the moment. They can't even trust them to make a school festival happen. Kind of thing in their own home turf, essentially, and so yeah. a lot was riding on it, and I don't think a lot of people realize that about that plot is there's so much riding on this one random school festival that Midoriya puts his heart and soul into saving, and I adore it. That's the reason I love this part of the story so much, because it is that part in between Infinity War, it's an Endgame, it's Ant-Man, basically. It's the Ant-Man of this plotline.
It's the Captain Marvel in between Infinity War and Endgame.
Exactly. Like, not everything is at stake, but the things that are at stake are precious. And I love that about this show as well as this story arc. And it works out so well. I still find myself crying to Gentle Criminal and Labrava's plots. Like, I found myself tearing up still. Even though I already read them in the manga, when it pops up again, I just can't help but feel bad for him. And
they did a good job executing the reveal of their plot. Like, when they reveal why everything's happening the way they do it kind of thing, it's like, okay, I get them now. They're not just random.
Absolutely. And I can't help but love all the actual school festival stuff. One, like, the actual band, the band idea that, like, yeah, we even talked about the amazingness of Bakugo threatening to murder everybody unless he's really good at the drums kind of thing.
What was that he said when they finally started playing? It's like, let's kill them with music!
Yeah, I love that. He's just, like, super angry. Yeah. and even his anger is like pumping them up. They're like, he's crazy, but a good kind of crazy right now.
No, and I think they were spot on with their J-pop band, because anybody knows back in season one when this show was a hit, people draw fan art of their characters, and you know that there's probably 1,000 Bakugo fan art pictures years ago that were all drummers in a band.
Well, he makes so the most fitting sense is for what it, I'm though.
Saying. Yeah, 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 absolutely.
Well, that's the interesting thing, too, is that, you know, I mean, this is just a little detail, but when I watched this, because by the point that we reviewed, not all the English dub had been put out yet, so when they started singing in the Japanese dub, the song they were singing was in English, which I'm just like, okay.
They do that stuff all the time.
No, yeah, J-pop uses a lot of English words in their songs.
Yeah, that just kind of threw me off guard, where I was just listening to a bunch of Japanese, and then suddenly switched back to English again. I'm like, wait. I thought I put the wrong dub on.
Oh, my God, we didn't even mention one of my favorite parts, which is actually just before the Drunken Criminal storyline. The makeup thing that Bakugo and Shoto have to do.
Oh, right, the whole the makeup daycare exam center, thing.
Yeah.
I totally forgot about that.
Well, that's also one of my favorite episodes, because it's like it's another character-building moment for them, because it's like, well, these guys are clearly, like, they're not great at working together at first, but they have to teach these kids how to be good, kind of thing, and they work so well together. No, it was...
Yeah, that was the season, yeah.
It was the season. It's, like, directly in the middle of right after.
It's got some good jokes, too.
Yeah, it's got some amazing jokes.
Without its comedy. Yeah.
Right.
Like, one of my favorite gags is the fact that Bakugo is just like, let's just murder the leader. Let's just murder him right here in front of
him. We gotta find the biggest dog and beat him up, and then they'll all fall in line, right?
Yeah.
With total unironic and sincerity, he's saying this. And the other kids are like, maybe let's try something else.
And they're like six, and that's what makes it funnier to me, is the fact that he's just like, yeah, let's just murder them all. It's fine. Like, no one will miss him. And it's just like, no, don't do that. And then, you know, it also brings up some of the stuff that, it brings up the fact that one of the person that that League of Villain was impersonating during the actual one from the last season.
Oh, Cammy?
Yeah, she was impersonating Cammy, and you find out who Cammy actually is an actual person. And you're also very relieved to find out she wasn't murdered.
Yeah, well, it's really she's not murdered, but two, wow, I didn't know they had Valley Girls in Japan, apparently.
Is her superhero name Cammy because she dresses like Cammy from Street Fighter, or
no? That was her actual name.
Oh, that's her actual name. Okay.
I don't remember if she had a superhero name yet. I don't know if they said everybody's superhero names at that point. But it's a sweet
it's probably some stupid superhero name, just like all the other ones.
And the reason I brought it up is because there's a part in that story, or in that little story, that affects the last chunk of this story.
Yes,
which is the moment where Endeavor and All Might start talking about what does the symbol of peace mean. And it's fascinating to try to see Endeavor, at this point, Endeavor finally is starting to take the idea of being number one seriously since All Might has been retired, because things have gotten worse, because the perception... It's if you were in the DC Universe and Superman decided... Or Superman was just done.
Superman did die, and it was a problem.
Exactly. But what if he was just gone, and he was actually just gone forever this time? Like, what if he just never came back?
Right.
If there was not a mullet Superman... Like, what
Batman would be the number one hero, but Batman is no symbol of peace, or Clark Kent's beacon of hope. Exactly.
Yeah. He is a scary dude, and that's the thing and that's who Endeavor is. Endeavor's a scary dude, and people say they like Batman, but if Batman was a real person, you would never want to meet Batman in real life.
Right. Whereas like All Might inspires hope while Endeavor punishes ignorance. So
exactly. And that's one of the reasons I brought it up, because the last, what is it, two episodes?
Two episodes, yeah.
They introduce some more characters finally. They finally bring in my boy Hawks.
Yeah.
Number Hawks, two hero.
Yes, the number two hero, in, who is so goddamn sarcastic, and I love him for it.
he's great.
He shows up, or they introduce him, as well as a few other characters who do, I think, eventually get kind of important later on in the plot lines. But he decides that he's going to help Endeavor be the number one hero, because he doesn't want to be the number one hero. He's like, look, I'm fine. I don't even want to be number two. I want to be like number 20 where no one cares that I'm here.
He's like ridiculously heroic. There's a sequence that I call the All-Star Superman Hawks sequence, where he's literally just chilling out, minding his own business, and unbeknownst to a lot of people around him, he's doing hero work without anyone even realizing it. It's crazy.
Yeah, he's having a full discussion with Endeavor, looking right at him, by the way. And he's like saves a dog from getting hit by a car and like that, stops was the guy that a, from
was that a suicidal
to
do dog to you guys? I don't that didn't well, seem like an accident. That dog running out in the street.
I don't know. Yeah, the thing is, like,
the way it was animated, yeah, it looked like that dog was looking for a release. Anyways,
that dog is that dog's like, oh my, it's gone. I need to go. but yeah, it's fascinating to watch because Hawks is just consistently, he's just helping people, and people are very appreciative of him. But it also brings down the fact that people don't want to talk to Endeavor. Like, no one wants to talk to Endeavor. Like, he's literally standing right next to Hawks, and everyone's just like, I don't want to go near him. That dude is covered in fire. I don't care.
And the one guy that Endeavor does approach, they're like, oh, Endeavor doesn't talk to people? You've changed, man!
Yeah, that was a great moment, because I'd like to think that's what would happen if a guy who's really into Zack Snyder Batman met Zack Snyder Batman. It's like it's because it's just like that guy really likes the darkness, but yeah. What I love the most about this part is there's things that are hinted at in the last two episodes that are alluded that are big deals throughout the rest of the moments after it. One of them is that they bring up this thing that it's a book that is being released by, it's like a memoir of an old villain back from the times before everyone accepted quirks, called, so Destro was his name? Like the liberation of meta, like of quirk people or something? I don't
remember. Right. They had like the meta-human liberation front or whatever.
But yeah, there's like people that are starting to like gravitate towards this because All Might's gone. And the one naked guy is like the one hint at it kind of thing.
He was about to try to destroy
his office, and I loved it. But then something magical happens. I guess this is the best way of putting it. A talking Nomu shows up.
Yeah, I mean, we've gotten this far, and we might as well talk about it. Yeah, which that was different, definitely. When you just see like, oh, this thing is actually sentient enough to actually like intimidate them.
In the manga, that's a lot of chapters in that for that one plot. Which I was surprised that they only did it in a few here, or in basically this two episodes.
I actually kind of like that, because that way it didn't leave it on like some giant cliffhanger, like you have to wait for another year to see this.
No,
I
was bummed. There's something huge that happens in this fight, to which the manga volume at least ends on that moment, and I'm like, holy shit, no freaking way. But in the anime, it just looks like they choose that moment for a commercial break, and then everything continues after that. It's anticlimactic, Justin.
It is accidentally anticlimactic because I remembered how intense this entire thing is.
Yeah,
like,
I was shook.
It is like there's a point where it ends, or where the actual point ends, that you're just like, oh, and you don't really know what to do from then on, and then you know the rest of the story happens, but.
It's a great episode, though, for anyone who hasn't seen the manga. I wouldn't be surprised if you weren't bitter by it, though.
Well, that's the thing, is that the episode itself, though, they still did a really good job with it. Because it's the struggle for Endeavor to be the number one, and to prove to everyone that he is the guy, now that All Might's gone. And it's fascinating to watch, because it also builds up on another thing that gets done further on, that I'm very excited to see get animated, which is Endeavor's entire thing. Endeavor.
Can we talk about the flaming elephant in the room?
let's talk about that.
Now, I'll just open it up with a question. You two can dispute it for a minute, and then I'm happy to give my two cents. Do either of you want Endeavor to be the number one hero? Do you think he actually deserves that after one episode?
I mean, that seems to be the whole trajectory of his arc, from the stuff that I know from Mike and a few things reading ahead, where it's like, it's not something you actually want, but they're trying to push for the whole Endeavor is becoming more aware that he has to become a better person, because now he has to. He has to face the fact that he's now the number one hero, and it's like, well, yeah, but if you're going to become the number one hero, people are going to have to find out about the stuff that you did in the past, kind of thing.
Do you think they will, though? Or do you think that's under the rug and it'll never come up again?
No, I think it's going to come up one day, because there's so many hints later on. Because I don't want to spoil anything, but here's the thing: the thing about Endeavor is that he wants to have the number one. Like, I don't want to say I want him to have the number one. I want him to earn the fact that he's number one.
Yeah.
He's desperately... He's trying to go from Frank Miller Batman to Adam West Batman. he really wants to be the guy, because that's the thing, is you look at Adam West
Quick
Batman...
Quick Robin, to the Endeavor Mobile!
Yeah,
he's exactly. always wanted like, to be the guy.
He wants Shoto to be his Robin kind of thing, and he wants this whole thing. Like, he wants to be the guy. He wants everyone to love him because he needs... Not because he wants it, per se, but because the people need that. And I like the fact that he's trying legitimately, and this is the beginning of him trying, and there's a lot of stuff, like I said, that's hinted that's further down the line, but I don't want to even mention any of it.
Yeah.
Really, because it
there is a problem with the writing of Endeavor.
Yes.
And, his and, actual character journey parallels not heroes overcoming things, but the villains being trash people. And I'm not sure that the writer is aware of that. Like, there's a scene where one of the Yakuza gives Eri a present and be like, here's a present. Cheer up, for hell's sakes, you know? And in the episode towards the end, we see Endeavor in a similar situation. And I'm like, no, stop. That makes him a garbage person. We just saw earlier this season that garbage people do these things. There's two women in Endeavor's life that are like, and this is a problem with a lot of animes, maybe it's a culture thing, but they're almost literally saying, well, maybe abusive relationships are heroic too. They're not. It's grossing me out. And someone needs to like...
I don't think they're implying that. I think what they're implying is just the messiness of dealing with post-abuse situations. Where it's like, it's still not fixed. Because, I mean, knowing people in my life who were also abused in situations like that, I'm not going to say exactly what, because this isn't that level of abuse. But like, knowing people who've been in those situations, it is messy. It's like, what happens after the point when the abuse has already really happened? And if the person actually says, I'm willing to change, how do you go forward with that? There's no right answer to it, really.
Well, that's the thing, exactly what Zarian's saying, is it's not the fact that it's like abusive relationships are good. It's the fact that, hey, there was somebody there. There's a reason why I like this person to begin with, and that person's coming back, is really what it comes down to. At least in my head, is the fact that Endeavor was a good guy. There's a reason why she saw in him the idea of, like, you know, being with a guy like that. And Endeavor finally has finally looked at himself in the mirror for the first time in a long time and realized that he's a garbage person. Shoto opened his eyes to that. The world has opened his eyes to that from the fact that he's the number one, but no one fucking likes him. And so he realizes, he's like, am I a garbage? Like, it's that thing. It's that joke. Am I a baddie?
That's like, what was it? The Helsinger Bridge at the end. It's like, am I a bad person?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, absolutely. Like, I think Endeavor's... Yeah, I think his personal character journey is great, but the characters around him, it's kind of gross. Like I said, the woman in the car, they're like, oh, it's something to admire. And I'm like, no, his abusive nature is not something to admire. Why would they have that character even imply that? And maybe I'm misinterpreting it because this subject matter makes me so angry. And
no, I think you're just, I want to say you're misinterpreting it, but the problem is Endeavor's a garbage person, so it makes it very difficult.
Yeah, like when he's alone being like, you know, when he... As we've seen him in the past, like, three and a half, actually comes to All Might and is willing to be like, All Might, why am I such a piece of garbage? Like, that's exactly. Huge character arc. But then, you know, you go to the wake of his destructive behavior and you see people in the wake all like, oh, well, it's fine. He remembers I like flowers. I'm like, well, I literally almost threw up in my mouth, you guys, hearing that.
I thought of it as a sweet thing because it was the idea that, like I said, I thought the idea was that he's always felt bad about what he's done, and he's just has never really said it. And
yeah, we need a timeline for this. We need like a nice, distinct timeline of what actually is going on, because everyone Endeavor knows, including him, they look pretty young, but this seems like it's at least a 20-year ordeal, you know?
Yeah, he's been at this for a while, and
oh yeah.
And that's the issue with I always had with Endeavor is it's hard to, or not Endeavor, but the timeline of My Hero Academia is that I don't really get the actual timeline sometimes. Because there's some stuff that's hinted on during the backstory for All For One, where they're like, yeah, there was a time where the world was a lot like the X-Men, where everybody hated the Quirks, kind of thing. And it's, yeah. And then you look at now, you're like, well, everything's like the DC universe, like in the Silver Age time, where everybody's like, everybody loves everybody, kind of thing. And now we're at a point where we've gone past the Silver Age, and now we're in the 90s, kind of thing. We're in the point where everybody's extreme.
Right.
And that's,
and how long has it been for that? Yeah, 15 years, 20, 30? How long has it been? Let us know.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, I mean, we should probably start winding down. We're already approaching 45 minutes with this review.
We're also getting close to, like, accidentally spoiling things later on.
I mean, we've talked a lot about the season overall. Like, you can get the gist of some things we said, people, but yeah, we want to make sure that there's still plenty of stuff to watch. Like, you could watch two episodes of My Academia on the time you listen to this review. But
there's one thing I want to bring up before we finish.
Yes, yes.
It was the singing version of what is, I think he says, "You Say Run," I think is the name of it.
Oh, yeah. Right, yeah.
That version is in the final battle in the Yakuza part. It was also used in the second movie. It's the exact same song that they used, and I still think it's really good, and it's a very powerful song.
Just
gonna throw that out there real quick.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And cool. You know, and yeah. Honestly, I liked watching this overall way more than I liked watching the last movie, because the last movie was fine, but this one had all the stuff that I thought was missing in the most recent movie, where I actually cared about what happened to the villains, I actually cared what happened to the heroes more so, and that kind of such. And I think this season overall was just so much fun on the whole. I mean, there's only a few things that were kind of pointless. Like, there's that whole first episode that's just a catch-up episode with the news reporter dude, which, okay, I gotta ask, if he has that quirk, does that mean that his quirk upgrades, like, because he has cameras all of his body, like, does that upgrade over time when new cameras start getting introduced? Does he absorb new cameras
into HD, his body? 4K, yeah, that'd be so cool.
Does he stream from his body at some point when they get to that?
Does he have, like, tabs on the entire world and he just doesn't tell anyone?
It's like, but,
Nosotra, Insect!
Yeah, so that was, you know, they always have one of those episodes to start off. So it's like, okay, whatever, it's a filler episode. Otherwise,
yeah.
They get pretty right into everything, and it works out really well. And I gotta say, the way the Yakuza arc ends, like the very end things that happen there, are some of the best stuff about the whole series, too, where I'm just like, oh, it's just so gratifying.
I was so excited, because when I got to that point in the manga, I'm like, oh, I can't wait to see this part animated.
Yeah. Otherwise, you know, I thought this was very good. I mean, the last third I thought was a little weaker, only just that it had such a high note with the Yakuza that it was a hard act to follow. But I it's hard to rank My Hero seasons against each other, say, oh, this is clearly the better one. I still say it's been a constantly great run all throughout this show. So I'm going to give this I'm going to give it 8 out of 10, or maybe 8.5 out of 10 times that I pray that Mineta will just go away at some point.
It's true. He's the worst.
Thinking the same.
Speaking
joke
of garbage
every 10
people.
Minutes,
yeah. Yeah. No matter how much you hate Endeavor, everybody can agree that we all hate Mineta.
No, I
That's
do.
The thing.
With that.
I want Endeavor to grow. I want Mineta to just disappear. Like,
Mineta
like,
does not serve the plot like Endeavor does. So no. I agree as well.
But that's why he should go away, because he literally does nothing except, dude, I'm horny.
There was
the time.
A gag I made on Reddit because somebody mentions, like, I would like him to get brutally murdered. He's like, I'd like him to just die off screen and everyone to just shrug and move on.
Wasn't that dude with the grape here with you guys? Shh, no, there wasn't.
Yeah, exactly. I called him the grapist for... Actually, I still call him the grapist because he's so gross. But I guess I'll go into my closing thoughts with that start. Other than Mineta being a garbage person still, I still really like the season. I kind of agree with that the last half was kind of let down, but it's not because it was better, the Yakuza part was better. It's because there's so much hinted at throughout that last half that I know where it goes, and I can't wait, and it just annoys me that I can't see it. And so, I think the Yakuza part's great. I think the Yakuza part honestly goes a little too long on certain points, but I think it would be great if you watched it all, like, at least if by a week-by-week basis. If you watched it now all the way through, I'm pretty sure it would be very exciting. But, I think the Yakuza part is great. I love the relationship between Lemillion, Midoriya, and Eri, and the fact that they just desperately want to protect this little girl. Especially
That's
somebody who's helped raise a little girl kind of thing. It's like, I get where you guys are coming from, and I would probably do anything kind of the same way. And I still love Gentle Criminal and La Brava a lot. They do such a good job at making me care about those two. As well as introducing a bunch of other small characters here and there that I know will be important later on. Some that I'm like, this is the first time I've seen you in color, kind of thing. And Hawks, I think, is a great character, and I like the fact that they introduced him. I can't wait to see everything they're going to do with him later on. And like I said, there's so much hinted at throughout the season that is going to be a huge plot point. And the final shot, or the final moment of the season, I'm not going to spoil any of that, but it is after the credits, so if you guys are watching it now, please watch the credits for the last episode to see this final part that involves Midoriya. That is a huge, big deal, and I can't wait to see that animated.
Yeah, I actually missed that scene, so I need to go back and watch it, because I looked it up on the wiki here, and I'm like, oh, that happened?
Yeah, that sequence, yeah, I don't even want to say, but it's such a great sequence, because it hints at a much larger thing going on that has been hinted at before, but even more so.
That was also hinted at in the movie.
Yes, also hinted at in the
movie. Both movies, kind of, yeah.
Oh yeah, that's true. Yeah, and I couldn't resist after I said it.
There it is.
I will personally give it still 8.5 out of 10 times Bakugo threatened to murder a child,
and he did that a lot. Bradley.
Well, I enjoyed this. Usually the fourth season of an anime, you can expect, I'd probably say, half filler. This actually doesn't contain any filler as of yet, and I was
except
very impressed to see that.
Yes. There are people accusing Gentle Criminal of being filler, but it's like, nope, he's totally in that manga.
He totally is. I didn't really... Oh, well, that's the thing. The Gentle Criminal stuff, it wasn't filler, and I don't want to say it was terrible, especially when I found out La Brava was 22 and not just a 7-year-old child, so that was cool. And honestly, that whole sequence, I thought it was just fine, but it does lead to the school festival, which I'll never understand. Maybe I've just been away from school way too long to appreciate the youth inspiring the nation by having a fun time and hooking up. But Class 1B, after the rock concert of Class 1A, Class 1B puts on my favorite joke of the season.
Oh, yeah.
I loved that sequence. So the Gentle Criminal stuff goes for me from a 6 to like a 7. I thought the Yakuza stuff was very good. There were some, you know, pet peeves of mine involving the Yakuza stuff, like Sir Night Eye's quirk. I hate that. I've always hated that. Animes always drift towards that eventually. The big, long, idealistic discussion of, is the future set in stone or can you change it? You can't change it unless you go plus ultra, or can you? No one really knows.
Only Doc Brown knows.
Exactly. Oh, you can't change your future, Midoriya.
It's your kiss, Midoriya.
I want to see that real bad now. Okay, go ahead.
All right, we have to go back to the future.
I could rant on this forever, so I'm going to try and close with an actual final thought. This show gets superheroes. Yes. Mirio, his power, you know, he has the power of Kitty Pryde. Anybody listening to this that's only ever seen the X-Men cartoons will be thinking, oh, that's too bad for him. It's not. This power he has is used with the imagination of someone who is insane. And his power is so OP and fun to watch and creative. And just seeing that a superhero whose ideals are of that golden age, you know, Stan Lee, Jack Kirby type, what's a hero? Someone that wants to help, shines through so bright. And I love it. Great character. All the new characters are fun. They had an episode where they're naming the top 10 characters. Yeah. And one of the actual heroes looks like a failed Dr. Wily robot.
Yeah, I was just... Okay, darn it, I was going to say that.
The washing machine is what you're talking about, isn't it?
How the heck is the washing machine one of the top 10 heroes?
It just says wash.
And the only
wash.
Word he
it's
says
like
is wash. Yeah. So what is it doing there? You know, at first I was like, what is that character even doing there? But then I thought, wait a second. The writer of this manga and the creators of this show, I bet his power is incredible to be at number 8. And I'm not even going to question it. That's how fun and creative these superpowers are. And I am a stickler. It's why I love Spider-Man, to the idea that a hero is someone who wants to and will help people. beautiful. Freaking Mirio's reverse Midoriya storytelling line that he goes through is just beautiful. And I'm going to give this... It's not my favorite season. That one's number three. Oh, I really like season one. I got to have this debate at a later time. Like I said, I'm ranting. I'm just going to give this 8 red capes, which are useful, out of 10.
Nuckets.
Capes are red. No.
Also, got to say, one person I've totally forgot about who I just love anytime he shows up. I love Red Riot. That dude's great.
Oh, yeah, me too.
Like, anytime he shows up, like, you just think he's just an expendable, like, oh, he's a dude who can harden kind of thing. But that's kind of his motivation, is that he's the dude that everyone forgets about until he shows up again. You're like, oh, yeah, that guy, he's great.
I feel bad because he had a great backstory and we didn't bring him up until now.
No, he was actually, if I remember correctly, maybe I'm wrong, that's Bakugo's literal only friend, right?
Like, yeah,
this is the only guy who's, yeah, like, definitely his friend.
Yeah.
The everyone power else, of friendship. You feel like is his friend, but he doesn't show it other than with that one guy.
See, that's why I love this anime.
Which is why there's so many fan fictions that were written about those two.
Oh, no. But season three, there's a moment where Midoriya says to him, you're Bakugo's friend, and it actually is a home run moment, and it's so powerful and beautiful, and all them ponies are like, shit, I wish we could measure our friendship up to that. But it's cool. This is a great show.
Oh, yeah.